You're listening to WWBC Coco, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Coco, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Coco, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere on God's magnificent planet.
That's right, on 1510wwbc.com. You can hit that listen live button. Get us on any one of your streaming devices. Of course, we also archive the shows there, and you can get that from on demand. And then you just pick by date. Of course, well, then we share all of that information on our social media platforms, which is SitaMediaInc.com, and our website, which is Sita Media. Well, actually, the website is SitaMediaInc.com, and it's all over social media as Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And like all of the other shows, Sita, I am so excited about today.
Yeah.
And the great guests that you have coming on today.
I know. I feel good about today.
Yes.
Someone asked me at the gym today, how are you? And I said, well, I feel great. I woke up this morning. Mm-hmm. I'm breathing,
That's right?
And so for listeners who are tuning into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today, if you're tuning in for the first time, you will be part of a very fun, unscripted, very interesting and educational show. On Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we try to remember that freedom of speech comes with a responsibility. And so we play nice on the radio, or Danny here would take us off air.
That's
so
right.
We're very grateful. He's a thumbs up. We're very grateful that we've been on air with our show, Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, for over 15 years. And we're still happy about receiving the proclamation, Ellen, yes, from the city of Coco. And we give people a platform on a show to talk about a book they have written, why they wrote it, what's their intention of writing the book, who their audiences are. We speak to people who want to talk about financial literacy. Some people are pro-war, anti-war. Some people want to talk about the suffering of other human beings and how can we help. Some folks want to talk about buying a house, getting a mortgage. Others want to speak about a quality education for all. Some want to talk about voting. Basically, we take care of humanity. We could kindly run the world at this point.
That's right. I think so. I feel good about
just give
that.
It to us. We'll handle it.
Yeah. Right. And so I'm so grateful that Ellen O'Neill is my co-host. She's been with me for 15 years, and I just went to hear her sing and listen to her band at a big gala here in Brevard. It was to benefit the historic Green Gables. And Ellen, you did a fantastic job, and you got us dancing.
Oh, so much fun.
As usual.
It was so much fun.
And then Allie is here. Allie Tambor is here. She's a friend of our show. She comes every Monday. And of course, Danny is running our board, and he's patiently listening to see what's going on today. We've got two wonderful segments lined up. On our second segment, we've got a gentleman named Aviraj Sharma. He's going to be calling in to speak about the instrument that he plays, Ellen, and you would know more about drums and tabla and all that. Yes. He has toured in Europe. He's performing on Carnegie Hall on May 27th. I'm extremely proud of him because as a Caribbean sister, and he's a Caribbean brother, his achievements are just amazing. And so he's also going to be one of the gentlemen that is helping to a vote on the Grammy Awards, which I think we just had it last. I'm not sure.
Yeah,
did it pass already?
Yeah, it passed already. But,
right.
But yes.
And so we'll talk to him on the second segment and all the great things he's doing to for the love of music and get more people involved in classical music, especially the young generation.
Well, and I learned that the tabla is specifically for Hindustani classical music, so which I didn't even know was a classification of music.
It is.
So I got a chance to listen to some of that this morning. That was amazing.
That's right. And so on our first segment, we've got a gentleman. His name is Jack Forbes. He's going to be speaking with us about, he is our guest today, and we're so grateful that he's on the phone. We have to ask him where he's calling in from. And he's the author of Natural Law and Inalienable Human Rights. Boy, I tell you, that's a big word, but it means so many things. And so we're going to talk to Mr. Forbes. Mr. Forbes, thank you for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends and tell us a little bit more about yourself and the book you have written, Natural Law and Inalienable Human Rights.
Well, thank you, Sita and Ellen and Ali and Danny. It's nice to talk and with you and meet you and have the opportunity to talk about my book. All of this started sometime shortly after the COVID crisis commenced. And as a lawyer, I started getting a lot of public employment clients who were not happy with being forced to take the vaccine, and they wanted to know what their options are and their rights, and that led me into a subspecialty within my law practice of employment civil liberties law. And my clients and other people who I spoke to in some group presentations were asking what the origin of these rights are and how extensive they are. They wanted to know how far an employer, and particularly a public employer, could go in obstructing their own personal choices in medical privacy. And so through the course of representing well over 50 public employees at various stages of their employment crisis during COVID, I decided that this was a book that needed to be written as to the origin of our fundamental rights, which has an amazing history within the United States. You know, we started out over, well, just about 250 years ago with the Declaration of Independence to justify separating ourselves from England, and then that was closely followed by the Constitution and then the Bill of Rights. And so in the Bill of Rights, we our founders wrote their version of what fundamental inalienable, they called it unalienable rights, rights that could not be given up as against the government. And so we have quite a great history of judicial and statutory enumeration of fundamental rights, but the rest of the world is does not necessarily follow that same history. And so my book was written not only for American readers to understand how lucky we are and what the extent is and origin of the rights, but also to help other countries understand what they need, not only in terms of the rights, but of course the enforcement of those rights. And we're seeing the consequence of a good development of that right now, in many ways, by our efforts to free up the people of Iran.
That's right. And you know, I think people throw around the word right, right? We always say, oh, do you want to be right or do you want to be fair? Do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? Do you want to be right? And you're so right about that, because my husband is from Iran and we're watching what's happening there. And people want the right to make their decisions, but it also comes down to choices as well. It comes down to life is about choices. And your book about natural law, you are also talking about the evolution of the natural law over history. And, you know, when you talk about history and we think about, you said 250 years ago, so much has happened in our nation since then. Can you expand a little bit about how did we get from that point where people came to America for a choice? They chose to come here. We all heard about the Tea Party and all that. And where we are today, where some people feel as though they don't have their rights.
Well, you know, the government of the United States, even though we have a constitution and statutes that afford people fundamental rights, it doesn't always make the right choices. And so it's really the duty of free people to enforce those rights through the courts, through civil disobedience or peaceful protests. Unfortunately, in Iran, they don't have that right to protest. When they do, they're slaughtered. So we choose to have freedom of speech. So with some restrictions for time, place, and manner, but otherwise, the ability to express our opinions. And many other countries, you cannot do that. Thailand, for example, you cannot do that because they have a royalty that cannot be defamed. You cannot speak about the government in that way. There are many other countries where we just don't have the ability to promote change and promote documents that will secure our rights.
Yeah, and we often talk on our show that freedom of speech comes with a responsibility, and our words matter and our actions matter. So I'm glad you touched on that as well, because, you know, people feel they just because we live in the United States, you could say what you want. But honestly, I think at some point we have to understand that you may not like who is in Washington, D.C. as our president, but you still have to show respect. And that's just how I feel. Whether we voted for someone or not, even here in our county in Brevard, I try to be respectful. So
yes, and you know, when you talk about freedom of speech is part of the. It was derived from natural law. So people ask, what is natural law? Some people get it confused with sovereign citizen dialogue, which is completely different. But natural law are inalienable. They're human rights that we have simply because we're human. Now, some people believe that those rights derive from religion and God. And I certainly respect those people. You don't even need to go to that, because natural law really derives from self-defense that was developed in prehistoric times when hunter-gatherers started becoming agricultural groups and interaction between groups of people started. And with those interactions, we had boundaries. All right, they created boundaries as to what you can do to someone else and what rights you have to protect yourself. So a lot of rights, such as freedom of speech, have developed and evolved from that basic concept of self-defense, the right to life, liberty, and happiness, basically, which words that are very profound and we see in our history and in the Constitution. So it doesn't stop with freedom of speech. Many of our fundamental rights in the United States extend from the concept of self-defense, the privilege against self-incrimination, religious freedom, due process, parental rights, the right of privacy, and so on. So we have all those, and we hope that other and it's not just the rights themselves, but the right to enforce those rights. So we also have the judicial system to enforce our rights, as I was able to do with many of my clients.
Yeah, and you know, that's a wonderful thing about the United States. We may not have the perfect justice system. Some people feel that way. But it is darn near perfect, if you ask me. Because I have followed a lot. My daughter is an attorney. My brother is an attorney. And like you said, you win some, you lose some, right? But at some point, you have to sit down and figure it out that promoting law-abiding behavior involves a mix of education, community engagement, and ensuring that there's fairness. And I think what you're saying is, over time, the United States and elsewhere, or legal system, the strategies involved in fostering fairness, it took a while.
It does take a while. And one of the things that I talk about in my book, Elon Musk was made a fantastic observation when he was considering the problem in Israel and Palestine and Gaza and how to solve this, because there's been generations of indoctrination of Palestinians to hate Jews and to believe that they have stolen their country. And consequently, it led to things like the Hamas attack, which is terrible and brutal and is not tolerable within, in an international law sense. And so one of the things that's necessary is to give education and re-educate them to understand that the Israelis, this is Elon Musk's opinion, and I share it, are not the enemy of the Palestinians. They're not the enemy. They could live they could coexist peacefully, except for Palestinians believe that Israelis must leave Gaza, must leave their homeland, and that it's been stolen. And that's just not true if you look at the history of
Then you ask yourself, like, where would they go? I mean, they have to learn to coexist, yeah. Right? And I think you're right about education. I mean, it would be good if all these countries who are fighting against each other would make a concerted effort to sit down. I mean, history, we should use history of the past to make our present and our future better, right? And it looks to me as if some people want to use history to remain in that historical mode. You can't. We have moved on. You can't say, well, because my grandmother covered up from head to toe, you have to do that too, whereas that's your right. But that happened way back then. In today's world, it's not like that. Or maybe because people were skinning animals and hanging them on a tree, you're going to start doing that. Those are historical things that happen. Today we have a refrigerator. You put your food in the fridge, right? Yeah. So it's like we've evolved. And I think you hit the nail on the head. Mm-hmm. Unless the people of that region, which we're all watching what's happening in Iran and Sudan and Gaza, and Israel, and of course the United States is involved as well. It's all history that's been played out in front of us that certain individuals won't let it go. So how do we help people to let them see that at some point we've got to take the time to promote civic literacy and promote education in those areas so that this generation can move on?
I have ideas on that, and I think I express them in the book. In order for religions to remain viable, they have to stop competing in a sense of all or nothing. You know, you cannot have every religion or any religion saying we are the only one. You cannot believe what you believe. So, in a sense, this goes to the essence of freedom of religion, whether it's within a family, making one of the family members an outcast because they don't believe what you believe, or whether it's between the Muslim and the Christian religion, or Hindu, Buddhism. You know, they basically need to coexist peacefully, or they're not going to become viable, and it's going to lead to war and tragedy continuing. So I think that's really part of the key. As long as we have religion, they must be peacefully coexisting. And that has to be the watchword for the world in order to solve these crises.
Well, you just described Trinidad and Tobago, where I was born, because we've got Muslims, Christians, Hindus, Baha'i, Jews, atheists, any other. We have people dancing to Calypso in the carnival on Tuesday, and then on Wednesday they're in the church with Lent, and then on Thursday they're in the temples and the mosque. And we've learned to coexist because I think people respect each other and they're non-judgmental about their religions. And I, what you're saying is everyone has to learn to coexist and be part of the family if they want to. But more importantly, what historical events help us to reveal the contours of natural law? Do you think it's like things like torture and war crimes and things like that? What events helped us?
Yeah, I think that the events of, for example, the Japanese during World War II, Hitler's actions, our actions with Pinochet down in South America, these and the U.S. sponsoring gain-of-function research surreptitiously, these are things that cannot be tolerated, but they illustrate the kind of overstepping of governments and trampling on human rights, there's been, you know, trials and a lot of expose of all of these events that show us what the limits of national interests are, because there, what you're getting at is there is a conflict at times between the self-defense necessity of countries that also have, you know, rights, and the fundamental rights of individuals. And no matter what the self-defense necessity of a country is, they cannot use that as an excuse to rape and murder and torture individuals, because they're inconsistent. And so natural rights for people trump natural rights for countries.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you if the national interest trumps natural law. And the answer is you cannot maim, rape, murder people in order to promote your national interest of your country.
Yes, yes. And because otherwise it makes natural law for individuals worthless. Because any country could say, well, it's in our national interest to kill off all the Jews or eliminate all the Muslims. You know, you can't make that justification. The justification has to be, you know, there's always going to be the fog of war and innocent people dying. We've seen that many, many times, and we've already seen it in this situation. In fact, I think Saudi Arabia or one of the countries accidentally shot down 3 U.S. jets. Just yesterday, fortunately, the pilots survived. So there are going to be mistakes, but the effort has to be to save lives and promote freedom.
Yeah. So what rights in the United States owes their origins to natural law, according to the decisions of the court?
Okay. Well, you know, many people, and including some judges, don't even understand how prolific natural law has been within the history of the United States jurisprudence. So the ban against cruel and unusual punishment I mentioned earlier, we can execute people, we can imprison them, we can put them in solitary for a certain period of time if punishment is necessary, but there are limits to it. And so our judiciary has created and established limits. Similarly, you cannot beat someone or threaten them with grievous harm in order to get them to make some confession, which may or may not be reliable. You can't take away their right of being armed with reasonable weapons, basically, because if you do that, they won't have the ability to stand up to a government that becomes a tyranny. So the right to bear arms arises from that. In California has Article 1, Section 1, and it reads, all people are by nature free and independent and have inalienable rights. Among these are enjoying and defending life, liberty, acquiring and possessing and protecting property, and pursuing and obtaining safety, happiness, and privacy. So California has specifically stated that privacy is one of the inalienable rights within California. And before that, it was questionable. Even the Griswold decision wasn't, which forbade use of contraceptives, wasn't clear that the right of privacy was the underlying right. But California's made that very clear. So there are all of these. It just goes on and on. Due process of law, both procedural and substantive. They can't take your property away. That's part of self-defense. The idea of being able to create security for your family and yourself.
Mr. Forbes, we all saw that when President Trump was running and he was talking about protecting the border. I remember there was an article written. I'm not sure if it was which publication it was, but they talked about that so many people live in gated communities where you have a gate and a code to get in, including myself. We have a gate and a code as well. But then they were kind of equating that to the fact that then you can't have people coming into the country illegally because you yourself, who live in the United States, by law, you have a home that is gated and you won't let anybody just willy-nilly come into your property.
Correct. And this is part of, it's related to the idea of due process. You want a government to protect you from unvetted people. That's the bottom line. We're a country of immigrants. All of us are. My grandparents were from Switzerland. My eight generations ago, we were from Scotland, and all of us have a heritage of immigrant status. But if we don't have a border, we don't have a country. I know it seems passé to say that, but that's true. You cannot allow people that are unvetted, who have bad intentions, coming into the country. There's been stories that some countries have let people out of prison and sent them over the border to come into our country. You just can't do it. So unfortunately, the prior administration allowed this to happen. And now we have laws that allow people to come in. I have friends in other countries that would love to come to the United States, but they can't get a visa to do it. But instead, we've in previous years recently been allowing people without any vetting whatsoever just to walk in and then rewarding them for that. But that's the opposite of affording our citizens freedom. And so
I have relatives that came legally to the United States, and it took mm-hmm. maybe 17 to 18 years when I petitioned for them. But you're absolutely correct, because the United States Embassy has a list before you could come into the country legally, and that list has things like you have to have certain labs done, you have to have a chest x-ray, you have to have a good police certificate, character record. There's a list that you have to follow and a criteria, and then you go to the embassy, and then they give you a visa to come in legally. But you're absolutely correct. It is protection for the American citizens, for people who are coming in. And it's very sad sometimes, because you have to fight between, the two factions here, the Republicans and Democrats, to show them how to be reasonable with that. But before we go, I want to give you 1 minute to tell us quickly. You spoke about the case for the Emergency Use Authorization Act during COVID-19, and you felt as though that was something that that the government should not have done.
Well, first of all, I think history has proved that it wasn't an emergency. COVID was overstated as to the danger involved in that. From personal experience, I had COVID twice, and it was less than a head cold for me. I think that a lot of the deaths were caused by the drugs given to the patients in the hospitals who were incentivized to declare someone suffering COVID, and financial incentives, and they were given drugs that actually made the illness worse. So basically, you have people that are healthy, young, not susceptible to dying, being forced to take a drug or lose their job. That turns out it doesn't stop you from communicating the illness, and it doesn't really it doesn't stop you from getting it either. So it had minimal effect, but then the reports of injuries, facial paralysis, strokes, and so on, were rampant depending on the batch that you received. So these are limits that the employers and public employers just cast aside, and now they're paying for it in lawsuits that are still pending.
Yeah.
And furthermore, mm-hmm. I'll tell you one more thing. The LA Unified School District was declaring religious exemptions firing to have resulted from insubordination. And we had to, and so they were denying unemployment benefits until I came along, and in a case, Coretta Miller versus LAUSD, got a decision at the appellate level that it cannot be insubordination when you don't take a COVID shot because of a sincerely held religious belief.
Right. And since we've all evolved over that, I myself knew a lot of nurses that decided they were not going to take the vaccine, and they ended up losing their jobs over it. And when you look back now, you're like, well, was that the right thing for the company to do? Because that person was expressing their right that I don't want a foreign body injected into me as well. So I'm glad that we had you on the show, because it's always good to have a person speaking to us and educating us here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And I want to say that when I was preparing for the show, I remembered a very good quote that Dr. Martin Luther King had said, that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And for our listeners, we just spoke with Mr. Jack Forbes about his book, Natural Law, and Inalienable Human Rights. And you are fascinating to speak with. I learned so much by just reading what you sent over for me and just reading about you, your book. I would love to have you back on another time, because we love shows where we can educate our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. So give us the website where we can find your book, and tell us the name of it one more time, and let the listeners who know who you are.
All right. So this book, the third edition of Natural Law and Inalienable Human Rights, and the subtitle is A Pathway to Freedom and Liberty by Jack Forbes, F-O-R-B-E-S, is available on Amazon and also barnesandnoble.com. Sita, maybe the next time I come out, I can talk to you a little more about my second career as an actor.
Oh, and, love that.
Yeah, so
yeah, I would like to say that if we want peace in our world, we have to have an international curry chicken and rice day, or curry potatoes, or just curry broccoli, whatever.
Because I think curry chicken.
Me too. I like the chicken tikka masala. And you're in LA, right? You're in Los Angeles?
Yes. Yeah, Los Angeles.
I'm going to be there for my son. We're having a Hindu wedding. My son is marrying a Jewish girl, so I'll be there for the bridal shower in April, and then I'm coming back for the wedding in May. But I tell you, I feel like our world need people who unite us, not divide. And yeah, use the past to make our present and our future so much better that we could leave the planet a better place for the people that come after us.
Well, I agree. And I hope that when you come out here, if you have time, I'd love to meet you.
Oh, I'll make sure. Yeah. Send me your phone number on the email. Yes.
Okay.
Fantastic. Right. Thank you.
Thank you all, Allie, Ellen, and Danny. And Sita, bye-bye.
We'll make bye-bye. Sure we share all of Mr. Forbes' information on our website, as well as all of our social media. I have one quick public service announcement that I need to read for our great friends at the Baba Senior Outreach. Join BABA Senior Outreach for our annual Senior Support Walk and Vendor Fair. They're gathering at Wickham Park on May 16th to celebrate their seniors one step at a time. From fresh food and light housekeeping to our Adopt-a-Senior and Companionship Program, we provide essential support for Brevard County adults age 60 and older. Come out for the giveaways, visit our senior vendors, and enter for your chance to win a $500 cash prize. Your presence helps us do even more. Visit babaseniouroutreach.org to learn more, and we'll see you on May 16th at Wickham Park. And we'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right after these quick messages.
Hi, Abby.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud9, that's Cloud number 9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9. Mattress and Furniture. Located in Titusville, Florida, Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in the beautiful sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and everywhere on the World Wide Web.
That's right. On 1510 WWBC.com, you can hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. Of course, there we also archive the shows, and then we share everything on our social media, which is Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and our website, which is SitaMediaInc.com.
That's right. And our first segment was wonderful with the attorney, actor, Jack Forbes. Jack Forbes. And you could see he worked on a lot of cases about civil rights. My goodness.
Well, what a fantastic, you know, just from divergent thinking, it was just such a great episode.
Right. And so for listeners who are tuning in for the first time to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we heat up the airwaves right here in Cocoa, Florida and around the world every Monday from 1 to 2. We've been on air for 15 years and we speak to people about topics right here in Brevard County, Florida, in our state and in our nation. Whether you want to talk about a book you've written and why you wrote it, sometimes you have an experience to share. You want to talk about the banking industry. You want to talk about mortgages. Some folks come on to talk about numerous nonprofits, clean air, water, sunshine. We have had so many people that came on to talk about the elderly and exploitation of children and the elderly and what's going on in Tallahassee, in Washington, D.C., the right to vote, the right not to vote, read a book, not read a book, go to the library, whatever it is. You want to talk about being an artist, a musician, why music is great and the love of music. And there's no difference today. Our second segment is with a gentleman. His name is Avirod Sharma. Like me, he's from the Caribbean. And he's got two parents from two different countries, Ellen. And he's going to talk to us about what he plays, which is something called tabla. And I won't take up his time. I'm going to have him speak to us about his multi-instrumentalist and composer. His dad was also a composer. He lives in the United States, and they have a school in New York as well. And so, Avi, you take it away.
Thank you so much, Sita. First of all, it's a pleasure to be on the air with you. I mean, keep up the amazing work that you're doing.
Thank you.
It's amazing to have you. So, you know, I'm here in New York City. My parents, my dad's from Trinidad and Tobago. My mom is from Guyana. You know, they're both, I would say, cultural ambassadors. And I'm saying it in a very humble way. The amount of work that they've done for the Caribbean community here in New York City, you know, it's truly, it was an honor to grow up here in Queens, New York, seeing what the impact of culture can do and how it can be used in a positive way to impact thousands, you know, of people. And in our family, music is our gift. And so it's a typical American dream story. You know, we started in the basement. We worked our way to a second floor apartment, and then we bought our own home. And then eventually we got our own facility, which we founded, and it's called the East Indian Music Academy. It's a nonprofit. And fast forward 30 years later, we have graduated over 40,000 students in Indian classical music throughout New York City, across the country, and in Canada.
What an accomplishment. And I tell you, when I think of you, I think of a phrase that I heard once before, that music is love and love is music. And you,
it sure is.
And you are from such an ambitious family.
I believe that that's how we're going to get world peace.
Yeah, through music.
As well as through multi-generational and multifunctional types of music.
That's really right, Al. You know what? You should meet up with him one day. We have your band play with him. So Abhirad, you know what? One thing about you that I love, you are so proud of your DNA and who you are and who the good Lord made you. And it transcends when you speak and when you play the tabla, when you close your eyes and you... it's like meditation for you, but I could feel through your music that you are trying so very hard to connect with the younger generations because you feel like you owe it to the ancestors. To talk to me about that, because that's what I feel when I hear you playing the drums.
Yeah, I mean, you know, music, you know, has, you know, there's a saying that music has the ability, you know, to shape the way we look at the world. And because music has been our family, I've seen the impact of what music can do. You know, it kind of instills a global identity. I don't know if you're aware of what that is. It's basically, you know, having, you know, it's basically, I would say it's like, you know, transcending geography and political borders. Music cuts through politics. It cuts through religion. It cuts through geography. And you get to meet people at the level of being a human being. And that is so powerful. It's very, very impactful. And I've experienced that throughout my life. And I think as I've seen the positive impacts, you just, you know, you become more and more passionate. And especially as an artist playing the tabla and you see how it impacts the people in the crowd. As you get older, you realize, man, there's a responsibility that comes with this. And then, you know, in my case, I've just owned up to it. And, you know, here I am doing my thing.
Yeah, it's like therapy. You know, like I enjoy getting together with the few trusted people in our lives and cooking. And if I'm having a bad day, I'll say, you know what, I'm going to start cooking something and invite my friends over or have some tea or whatever. And I find it's very therapeutic because I love doing that with my children, my friends. I like throwing a party. Let's put it that way. You know how Trinidadians are. They just love to have a party, right? Now, I notice with you, your therapy, it seems like, is your music. If you're having a bad day, I would think that you just said, that's it. I'm just going to go play my drums and then you feel better.
Yes, absolutely. So, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Napoleon Hill. I'm sure your listeners are aware of the book Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, whose work was based on the work of Andrew Carnegie. And one of the techniques they taught in that book, and I was a teenager reading this, there's an idea called transmutation, the ability to convert one form of energy into another form. So basically, you know, when you're experiencing a negative emotion or if you're in a negative situation, you can instantly convert that into something positive. So in my case, it was music. For others, it could be art. It could be drawing. It could be sports. It could be video games, whatever it may be. And once you were able to now just channel it out, and 15 minutes later, you come back and you're refreshed, you're back with a positive mindset. And when you practice this regularly, this technique, transmutation, you become so good at it that within a split second, if someone says something negative to you, you were able to quickly calculate, change that, and then, you know, see it in a positive way.
That's right.
And so, you know, it's a very powerful thing.
Well, in Trinidad, I think talking is something that people use to help them emotionally because they have a lot of commas and couture.
That's right. Kushner for sure. And a lot of that could be taken care of if you have actual communication. People, they love Bacchanal, right? Back home.
And believe it or not, somebody once said to me, they're like, well, how is it possible that the people have so much Bacchanal going on? And this one cursing out that one, and this one having bad attitude. Yeah. And then 2 days later, they're all in a fete, and they're dancing together.
Right.
So maybe that's an art form, Kames and Couture. Somebody needs to trademark that. You know what I mean?
I agree. And if I may add, I mean, I'm considered what we call a third culture kid.
Yeah.
And it's basically, you know, when we're basically people who are raised in a different culture than their parents, right? So here I am, a Trinidadian-born Guyanese, okay?
Yeah.
Follow me here. Trinidad-born Guyanese, grew up in India. So I went to 5 different schools, right? So from India to Trinidad to the U.S., right? And both of my parents are from 2 different backgrounds, right? So we were raised to be very neutral. We have to be very objective. We have to see things in a very fair and honest way. And what it does, I think, when you can see things from a perspective point of view rather than a perception, it's a very important argument. Perception versus perspective. You know, as you're aware, perception is when you see things just from your point of view, but perspective is when you can step out of yourself, outside yourself, and go into someone else's shoe and try to understand where they're coming from. The world would be in a much better place if we can just see things from other people's, you know, point of views and other positions. And luckily, I've been living that way, and it's extremely powerful when you can see things from numerous perspectives. There's a great film, by the way, a Hollywood film back in the early 90s. Is it 90s? Mid 2000s, called Vantage Point. I encourage all of you to see it. You know, you see things from different camera angles, and with Facebook and social media today, we're only seeing a small view, right, of what's happening. We don't see the whole picture. And it's so important to see the entire picture before making judgments about any situation, about politics, or anything that's happening around the world.
Right. So, yeah. Well, it's like to be non-judgmental, right? But, you know, the thing about you, Avi, is you could probably write 10 books about colorism, being accepted, having to explain your Indian heritage, even though you lived in India. There is a segment of society that once they hear us sing a bhajan or they hear you do a Hindu prayers in a temple, they're like, oh, and you're from the Caribbean? Yes, we are. And then I see you, Caribbean-born, being featured in the New York Times, the Rolling Stone magazine, PBS, Chicago Tribune, ZTV. Yeah. And not only that, you worked on Mira Nair's film as well. And you, I'm sure you've had to explain yourself when you say, well, I'm a Trinidad-born Guyanese as well. So talk to us a little bit about that.
It's exhausting. I mean, everywhere I go, I have to, you know, create this picture so people understand where I'm coming from, you know? And so, yeah, so to answer your question, I was very fortunate back in 2023 to work with Mira Nair on an adaptation. She did a film called Monsoon Wedding back in the early 2000s. And so they did a musical of it here in Brooklyn at St. Anne's Warehouse. So I was the resident percussionist for the project, worked with all these brilliant actors and dance choreographers, and of course with her at the helm. And it was such a beautiful experience, you know, being an Indo-Caribbean coming in. And they're all watching me like, okay, who is this guy? Like, they're
all and you got a ponytail and everything. And, you know, when I see your picture and I see you performing like on TikTok or Facebook or something, I'm like, this is a guy that every Trinidadian mother or Caribbean mother wants their son to grow up to be, square his shoulders, put that man bun on, and walk on that stage and make us so proud. So I think you should have recording to all these people and say, where are you from and who are you? So you just hit the button and play it.
Thank you. I can't take credit for that. I got to give all that credit to my parents. When you were raised with amazing role models around you, I think, you know, we talk about, you know, a privilege. I think there's something called parental privilege, where you fortunate, if you're lucky enough to see these amazing personalities in front of you, and you grow up seeing it, and you're like, man, where am I going to find my place in all of this? You know, because you see all of their achievements, and you have to navigate and find your own way while respecting their standards and their way of life. So I'm very blessed to have been raised with amazing role models.
A friend of mine used to call it that. Yeah. He said that he hit the ovarian lottery. Like he got the best parents ever.
Oh, my God. That's a nice way of saying it.
I know, right?
So you were trained by your dad, Dr. Ravidin Ramsamuj. And my
right.
God, you please give him and your mom, you know, our praise and thanks for raising such a wonderful son. Of all the instruments, why tabla?
Sure.
Because there's the dantal, there's the sitar, the organ, all these. But you chose the tabla, and I must say your music is absolutely beautiful.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Well, I, you know, as any instrument, you can take it up and it starts out maybe as a hobby, or even you're not even sure where this is going to take you. But after, you know, the amount of exposure I got as a young kid growing up in Queens, one day I had this experience playing tabla where someone, after my performance, came up to me and started to cry, you know. And she said, "Why did you play the tabla or hit the note in that particular way?" I said, "What do you mean? I wasn't trying to do anything. You know, I'm just playing because I love what I'm doing." She said, "No, there's the way you played the note that made me cry and made her emotional." And after that day, I realized, wait a second, there is some sort of a spiritual component to this. This is not just entertainment. Sorry, this is not just entertainment. And after doing research, you know, I realized that, you know, especially Indian music, Hindustani classical music, right? It's, you know, it's designed to morally and spiritually uplift, right? Entertainment is a byproduct. It's not the primary goal. So it's all about, you know, connecting with your soul. And hopefully if you really deeply connect through tabla playing or whatever the art is, everyone else start to connect with it. And that's what's happening for me. And, you know, it's a blessing.
Right. And so in 2025, your talents, it's not going unnoticed by people. You became a new voting member for the Grammy Awards. So talk to us about that.
Ooh, that's a whole new hat that I have to wear now. I mean, it's incredible. So, yeah, thank you. You know, basically, I was inducted into the Recording Academy, which means I'm one of the voters out of the 15,000 voters worldwide that helped to nominate albums that eventually become a Grammy Award. So I have to listen to a series of albums. I have to critique them and be very objective, and then basically given my submissions to what I think should become nominated. And so it's an amazing responsibility. At the same time, it's a great pleasure because you get to learn about new artists from around the world while you're still critiquing all the mainstream people like Bad Bunny and guys like Marshall Montano from, you know, from Trinidad. So so it's a huge responsibility now as a musician. I have to be very careful.
So tell us how you added Carnegie Hall to your resume.
Oh boy. You know, I tell you something, when you have the right attitude, you work hard at something, I truly believe the universe takes care of you. And, you know, I've been playing through social media. Someone saw me they've been watching me for the last 20 years online. And she said, "You know, I've been a big fan of you." And then she told me, you know, who she was. And her name is Falu. She's a Grammy winning artist. And she's like, "Hey, you know, we love your work. We want to feature you at Carnegie Hall. I think it's going to be amazing." And so on March 27th, I'll be playing in this concert format called Surrender. Basically, every time we play, especially Indian music, we're literally surrendering to the divine. It's not a concert. It's not a performance per se. So the way we were trained in the arts, you know, we're constantly surrendering to the divine. And so this is like a homage to that. And it'll take place on March 27th at Carnegie Hall. So it's a great honor and privilege to represent the Indo-Caribbeans and Indians everywhere worldwide. And again, it's a blessing. Thank you.
And thank you for teaching me about the drumming and this particular percussion. I run a jam on Thursday nights, and I have people that show up with different types of cultural drums. I'll just call them cultural in general, dembe, and some other ones as well. So I was so connected to you today.
So
thank you so much. Thank you.
Hi, this is Allie. I just wanted to ask a question about your European tours. How are they going to go?
Amazing, amazing. I mean, so I've been honored to play with this ensemble called Sukarma from Nepal, and I've been playing with them for the last 10 years internationally. And it's amazing when you're out there, in Europe, you know, people are intrigued. They love, you know, world cultures, world music, and, you know, again, because of my Caribbean background, it's like that unique, you know, angle. And so people are intrigued because most people,
when you think of Caribbean, you're thinking of Bob Marley, reggae, dancehall,
yeah,
you know, and that's about it. But they don't realize there's this whole other culture that's in the Caribbean. And so going there, they're so elated to see, like, wow, you were playing tabla that you learned in the Western world, and you were playing with Nepali people. Like, what? You know? So it's you know, for them to wrap their head around that, it's like, oh my God. But no, it was a phenomenal experience. And like I said, it's you know, I'm slowly, it seems that I'm being positioned to be like some sort of an ambassador for world music.
I was just going to say, you're taking the Caribbean with you, and you also, Jai Hind, you also was in collaboration, and you're on an India Times record label.
That's right. That occurred last year. I was very honored to work with Hidayat Khan, who is the son of the legendary Vilayat Khan, who is a very famous sitar player. For those of you listeners who don't know, you think of Ravi Shankar, right? He is one of the biggest names. He's the one who brought, you know, connected with the Beatles back in the 60s and 70s. Vilayat Khan is like the next big honcho, you know, in Indian classical music when it comes to sitar playing. So I was fortunate to work with his son, and we released this beautiful, you know, rendition, you know, with the Times record label, and it was received very, very well. And like I said, it's such an honor. Literally, it feels like a 360, you know, because our ancestors left India 180 years ago. And to be able to contribute back to India through the arts, I mean, it's hard to express that feeling. You know, it just feels like I'm home again, you know, because, you know,
well,
music
God
does
is
that,
speaking
right?
through you, Avi. Yeah. The ancestors are speaking through you. And Ellen's got one more question before we go off air.
So I know that you were nominated for a Independent Music Awards. Tell us about some of the albums that you have and how people can download them.
Great. So my last album, it's called Crossing Continents. And basically, I invited, you know, world-class percussionists from India, the Caribbean, here in the United States as well. And, you know, basically, you know, created this, you know, it's a soundtrack of percussions basically from around the world. So you can definitely check it out on Spotify you know, YouTube Music. And, you know, wherever you listen to your digital streams. So the Crossing Continents, and then I'm working on another album soon that I will submit for Grammy consideration. So I'll let you know more about that one at a time.
For Grammy consideration. I'm so, like, enthralled with you. You're, like, my new best friend.
Yeah, we want to hear you play, Avi. So if I wasn't going to L.A. twice in the next couple of months, I would probably fly out to New York to hear you on the 27th. Yeah. But I don't know, Danny, do we have a few more seconds or anything to ask him anything else? I mean, all right, we got 1 minute. So tell us how.
Okay. Can I make another plug?
Yes, you can. You have a minute. Go for it.
Okay, great. So my family, we were also in the cricket business, you know. So I have my younger brother there in South Florida. His name is Yoga Ramsamuj. He's a team manager for the CPL team, the Antigua and Barbuda Falcons. And he's also a property manager. So if you guys need to rent any apartment in South Florida, you can call him at 954-666-1250, guys.
You could. Ellen will put it on our website as well. But Avi, what your craft of music and your brothers of cricket, it all tells me that your upbringing, that everything starts at home, right? The foundation for everything starts at home. And what I hear from you is that there was a lot of love, but there was also a lot of discipline in your home.
Yes, indeed. My dad was definitely the disciplinarian, and my mom would always be the one to soften the blows.
And I think you have a wonderful wife who is now at your side, and she encourages you. And you know, you've been blessed. And one priest told me once that the reason why we have this radio show, Ellen, myself, Danny, Annie, and our station, WWBC, he said that God speaks through people in different ways. Yeah. And mine is my voice. And I hope that's a legacy we will leave behind, that our grandchildren can do something wonderful for humanity and leave a good planet behind. And I think yours is through music. And we all understand that you're a good, kind, decent, disciplined human being. And you just keep going forward and ignore all the naysayers. Because I know there's some jealousy there. I know how Trini people and Caribbean people are. And I know some of them are a little bit jealous of you, but don't listen to them.
That's right.
It's okay. It comes with the territory, right? You'll always be criticized no matter what you do. But you just got to keep that chin up and keep moving forward with grace.
World peace begins with us
curry chicken.
I mean, that's curry chicken. That's right. Thanks again, all of our listeners, for tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. here each and every Monday on 1510wwbc.com. Thanks for a fantastic, great episode today with Jack Forbes. And Avi, thank you so much for tuning in. We will see you next week.
Thank you for having me on the air.
Oh, Avi, that was...
Hey.